Hello, it's Monday, the 17th of July. It's time for Brit Sox and Nerds. And yes, we are sticking with that name. This is the Red Sox spin-off podcast of Bat Flips and Nerds. I'm your host, Tom Pringle. As always, we'll start with our parish notices. So you can find us on batflipsandnerds.com. All of our social media details, latest writing and events are all on there. We do have a big MLB event, MLB UK event coming up soon. It's not specifically us. It's two guys running the MLB community for the UK. They'll be running that soon. Go onto our website. You'll get all the latest details there. My regular co-host, John McGee, can't be with us tonight as he's too busy slipping out of his skinny jeans, taking off his hipster Walkman tape cassette and recovering from his fanboy antics at Wimbledon. Instead, in the second time round for this new podcast, we're not stopping when it comes to great guests. So tonight we have a Red Sox writer for one of the fantastic baseball prospectus local sites, BP Boston. He's also the editor and host for the excellent BP Boston podcast, The Red Seat. It's Jake Devereux. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Tom. Excited to be on. First time being on an English podcast. So this is a cool experience.
So like Jared, we've broken your British virginity.
That's right. Gently, I might add.
Have I managed to butcher your last name as well?
Nope, Devereux. That's it. You got it good.
What's the heritage of that then?
Actually, Wexford, Ireland is where you can find most people with my last name. So not too far from you guys.
No, that's interesting. I was like, assuming it was going to be French straight away.
Yeah, it's a Norman last name, but most of the relatives emigrated from Ireland.
Oh, there you go. Interesting. Yeah. So we'll start as we always do then. So how did you get into baseball writing to begin with?
Well, for me, it was kind of funny. It all started with fantasy baseball. A friend of mine dragged me into a long-term dynasty league in, I guess it would be 2010 at this point. And it was one of these leagues where you had to acquire prospects to be really good at it. And I started to kind of follow things from that angle. And I'd been kind of looking for some way to get into journalism. It was always something that interested me. So I read this great site frequently. It was called thedynastyguru.com. And the editor of Baseball Prospectus, Brett Sayer, was the one who founded that site. And this was early days of that site. And he put up an advertisement that he was looking for writers. And I emailed him and I said, hey, I'd be really interested in writing for you guys. He told me to send in a guest piece to him. He gave me a topic idea. I wrote it. I sent it in. And he said, actually, you know, this was good, but you're not what we were looking for. So I failed my first time trying. But I did catch on with another site. It was called Baseball Professor at the time. I started doing a little bit of fantasy writing for them. And then a friend of mine who actually played in the same long-term dynasty league got the crazy idea for us to do a daily fantasy podcast. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we would publish a podcast and it would come out. It would be on all of the fantasy baseball topics. And as you can imagine, this is a lot of work. We were also writing on top of that. We were publishing a draft guide every year. I was doing a lot for this site in particular, and you know, the wife was getting a little frustrated because I was doing so much work for this thing, and that lasted for a few years, and then I got the opportunity to start writing at the Dynasty Guru, which was the first site who rejected me. Wrote there for a while, made some connects there, and then I decided that, you know, my favorite team and the team that I care about most of all is my hometown Red Sox. I've been writing about this fantasy stuff for a while and I wanted to transition. So I contacted Brett, asked him if he knew anybody over at BP Boston. And he was like, yeah, actually I do. And so do you, because a fellow Dynasty Guru guy, Ben Carsley, had become the editor in chief over at BP Boston. So I contacted Ben. I said, hey, Ben, what's up? You know, we've written together a few times on the site. I'd love to start writing for BP Boston. And he said, sure. So I went over there as an intern and pitched him the idea of the podcast. And the rest is history. And I've been doing the Red Seat now. We've got, 45 episodes under our belt now. It's a weekly podcast, not daily. So my wife isn't going to kill me anymore. It's a much more manageable part of my life, and I get to follow the team that I love. So really, it couldn't have worked out much better.
We'll come on to the red seat soon, but I'm more interested in these daily podcasts then. So we're chatting beforehand, and you're a history teacher. So, I mean, how long were these podcasts, and how did you research for them during the day?
Well, typically they were between a half an hour and an hour. Occasionally we would go over, but both of us were working, you know, full time. So we would try and make a very concerted effort not to go too much over 30 minutes most of the time. If we got to 40, we'd kind of, all right, guys, that's it for the day. And we had a lot of listener participation. So what we'd do is during the day, we'd kind of both get a little bit of time for research. We'd email each other back and forth. We'd kind of email back and forth drafts of the agenda and what we wanted to talk about that was relevant for that day. We'd consolidate all our listener questions, and then that would be it. And we would just go on that material and just kind of riff on whatever the most relevant fantasy news was. We had some go-to segments. You know, we'd cover off on closer stuff and waiver wire guys, and we'd play some games, buy or sell, and all that stuff. And it made for a really good podcast, and it made for great chemistry too, because the guy Adam Notif, who I was doing it with, you know, and I talked every day. We talked more than almost I talked to anybody. So the chemistry got quite good on that podcast.
Yeah, I suppose fantasy does lend itself to stuff like that, doesn't it? Because obviously, like you say, you got the waiver wire, you got guys who are going to be coming off the DL, prospects who get called up, etc. I mean, was this sort of pre-RotoWire days where you could just get an update immediately?
Well, it was kind of right around that time where RotoWorld and RotoWire were still being used, but maybe not as in-depth as they are now. You know, if you wanted to really get an idea of whether or not a certain player was worth a pickup and look a little bit under what his surface level stats were, we would do those deep dives. We'd break down a guy and we'd go into his advanced baseball prospectus stats like true average and, you know, Sierra for pitchers, the Fangraphs stat. And we would use a lot of the other more advanced metrics out there to kind of really let people know whether or not these guys were worth their while. So it was a more sabermetric spin than I think what most people were getting out there on the sites like RotoWorld and RotoWire and the like.
Yeah, so you could get a bit deeper into it. So then said you switched on to covering the Red Sox then. So how did you previously cover Red Sox players? Because I've certainly found, especially when talking on the pod for us and writing, I try and be really, really reluctant to praise any Red Sox players or try and big them up at all. I find generally I've got to be quite reserved about it, even though inside I'm desperate to be excited, especially when you've got, you know, Zoolander just being incredible at third base.
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard to temper your expectations because, you know, deep down I'm an unabashed homer. I'm sure you're very much the same way. So you got to kind of temper that. But I think that having a co-host like Adam, who was a Mets fan, so he would always act as the foil to me whenever I would get overly excited about a player. You know, I probably said too many nice things about Will Middlebrooks back in the day that were certainly not deserved. And, you know, over time, I think as I just saw more and more of these flash in the pan guys fail, it made it a little bit more easier. It made it a little easier for me to kind of temper my expectations for these particular players and take a little bit of a step back. And I think I in some ways may have even overcorrected, because if you do listen to my podcast The Red Seat, especially our preseason stuff, I mean, talking about David Price and Drew Pomerantz and what we expected of those guys, I mean, you would have thought I was talking about two of the worst starters in baseball with what I expected out of those two this year. So it's tough to find a balance. It really is. But you got to kind of just look at them like anybody else and let the numbers do the talking.
Yeah, exactly. I think just slipping into it quickly, I think we all thought the same about Pomerantz. I'm not sure we had the same opinion on Price, but yeah, definitely Pomerantz. So what's it like covering baseball in Boston then? I mean, we've spoken about the fact that before you were covering quite a wide range, the whole of MLB and prospects, etc. What was sort of like your comments and feedback at that site compared to BP Boston now? I imagine that the Boston faithful, maybe not so much on BP, are quite vociferous and a bit aggressive.
Well, you know, it's very different. Going from covering the league as a whole to covering baseball for just one team is you kind of just have to take your really wide view and super focus it. And what it helped me do is it helped me become a better fan, because I kind of had to pay attention to a lot of the minutiae of a team that I wouldn't necessarily be paying attention to before. Things like players who had their arbitration years coming up, or you know, paying more attention to the 40-man roster and the active roster, and what guys you know, would be Rule 5 protected, and all sorts of things that, like, you don't really think about when you're thinking about it from a fantasy angle. You're thinking about who can help you right away. And then covering it for Boston in particular, I think that it's one of the most active teams in the entire major league. So whenever any rumor starts or any story picks up steam, it's always magnified here. You know, the third base situation in Boston is a great example of that. There are plenty of other teams that have holes at different positions, but when the Red Sox have a hole at a position, it becomes national news. So things are just covered to the point where it's extremely magnified.
And when it's a hole that's left by Pablo Sandoval, that's a big hole to fill.
Yes, it's a huge hole. Absolutely.
So let's go on to BP Boston then. So who are all the characters there at the moment then? Because there's quite a lot of guys working there. And is there any certain traits we should be looking for? And on the show notes, I put brackets, Joiner, .. Because I know what you can be like.
Yeah, well, Joiner is Joiner's an acquired taste, man. I don't know if you've listened to him much, but he does some of the best stuff out there, I have to say. Brian is one of my favorite writers. What's unique about Brian is Brian's ability to cover the team both as a fan and as somebody who has really unique and smart takes on everything Red Sox. And I think what I really like about his writing style, and what I kind of try and emulate myself, is that he hits on the emotional piece without sounding too much like an unabashed homer. He manages that balance quite well. And he also is able to mix in a good amount of analytics. Matt Corey, another guy who appears on my podcast, he is definitely more on the analytical side. Does great stuff, and especially has very contrarian opinions. You will read from Matt Corey things that are against whatever the contemporary Red Sox group think is at the time. And I think that, you know, as someone who probably is on Twitter a lot, Tom, I assume you're on Red Sox Twitter quite a bit following the news, you can fall into these thought patterns, you know, where everyone's thinking the same thing. And Matt Corey is always so willing to take a step back and be like, well, maybe not that over there, what you guys are all talking about. Maybe this over here. So, you know, having him as on the podcast as a regular has been awesome to kind of broaden that out. And then we also have Brett Cowett, who is our new managing editor over at BP Boston. He's a younger guy. He just got out of college. Tremendous with the analytical side of things. Really comes with great stats all the time and looks at it from new angles. We have Chris Teeter and Cam Ellis as well writing for the site. Both do tremendous stuff with the BP stats. I'm trying to think, who am I leaving out? I guess I'm leaving out Ben Carsley, who was our former managing editor and former member of the podcast, who's now doing a lot of the prospect stuff over at BP. Also covering a lot of the fantasy side of things. So he's kind of switched back into that role that he was very familiar with. But Ben always just has incredibly nuanced takes because he's been doing it so long, and he's been doing it around people that know the game so well. So he's been awesome. But the interesting thing, like I was mentioning to you before we got on the show, was Teeter is in New Brunswick, Canada. Cam is in Washington, D.C. Brett is just outside of Seattle. Matt Corey is outside of Portland, Oregon. Brian Joyner's right outside of New York City. And I'm the only one in Massachusetts. So it's a very, very far-flung cast of Red Sox fans here from everywhere. So it's we don't get to meet up for a beer as much as I'd like to. The only person I've actually met up for a beer with is Matt Collins. I don't know if you remember him, but he runs the Over the Monster site now. And I met up for a beer with him in Maine. He's now up in Maine. He's nice and close to the AA club. So it's a good group, and we're able to you know, learn a lot from each other. But I wish we were a little closer in terms of geographic area, because it'd be cool to get these guys all in the same room at one point for like a round table or something.
Is there any scope for that? Do you think it could happen in the future, even if you got, you know, 5 out of 9 or whatever it is?
I think it could. We've started doing these events at Baseball Prospectus, these ballpark meetups, which are really cool, where we take a major league park, you know, whether it was Citi Field last year, PNC Park, I think at Milwaukee we did this year as well, and a bunch of guys fly out, and we kind of do a panel with some of the baseball executives from whatever that team is. And then we do a Q&A with some of the Baseball Prospectus guys. So in the future, if one of those comes around here, a little bit more local, that'll probably be something where we can get a bunch of us out to the same event and together. I just missed the Citi Field one last year because that was pretty close to me. But if one comes to Fenway, you know, that's going to be it's going to be perfect for me. But I think I could get down to New York, especially if it's an enemy territory like Yankee Stadium. I'd like to do that.
Just make sure Brian ships off the kids for the weekend or something, just so you've got a good night's sleep while you're there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep, and good night of drinking too.
So I'm interested, like, the fact that all those guys are in different places. Do you think that helps their opinion, that the fact that they're not in Massachusetts, so at least they can have an outsider's look and look in and read the national news? Do they read the local stuff, or do they just try and stick to what's around them?
They definitely read the local stuff, but they're not oversaturated by it in the way that I am. You know, being in Boston, every time I drive, I throw on sports radio, 98.5, the Sports Hub, and our other local one is 93.7 WEI. And for as many good guests and as good writers as they get on there, you get a lot of shit as well. So, you know, sifting through that and realizing what people are overreacting to is something that I kind of have to do that these guys don't. You know, they're not exposed to that at all. So they're just reading the best of the writers from the area, the Alex Spears and the Evangelics and the more reasonable takes out there. So every once in a while, I'll throw these guys a curveball from something crazy I've heard on the radio on my drive over here and see how they react to that. But I do think it insulates them a little bit more, and it makes the takes that you get on the red seat a little bit more balanced.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I can't imagine listening to that radio after a Price start or a Kimball blown save. I don't think I could do it. I'd have to turn the radio off and just ignore it for that drive.
Yeah, it's it can be really negative, and you can get people saying the craziest stuff. Like, I think the year after Bogaerts made his debut and had like a good end to the season, and he had that rough year, I think it was in 2013, maybe. There were so many people calling for trade Bogaerts, trade him for a reliever or whatever. Just like, you hear so much nonsense on there. I mean, if it was up to the radio, the Red Sox would not have a farm system, and we'd have a whole lot of useless overpaid players, and we already have enough of them as it is. So
don't
need any more at all. So thank God those guys don't run anything.
We've mentioned the red seat a couple of times. I have to admit, I've probably only got in for the last 15 episodes or so. It's the only time when I picked it up. But I really like it. It's a great show, and I think that the point that you make is really good. The fact that the views are very much against at times. There's not too many times when it's completely, yep, I agree. Let's move on to the next topic, which is not like a hot take thing, but you're actually trying to put out your viewpoint. It's really, really interesting to listen to the different sides. David Price being a big one, just a split between the two. But tell us about the podcast then. What makes it so different?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, is that we have a unique cast of characters between myself, Brian, Matt, and Ben when he was on, and Brett. And basically, we all are going to disagree on certain things, and we all have our guys that we kind of give a pass to more, those guys that we're a little bit irrational about. And I think that what we do is we kind of go in there and we cultivate all the information together and we suss it out as much as logical people can do. So I think we're always trying to operate from the same set of facts and reach a point where we can kind of agree and present the information. It's almost like going to court sometimes with these guys. We're both kind of presenting a side and trying to get to the bottom of whatever it is, but we end up having some pretty good discussions. And I think it's unique because we're able to pull in a lot of the advanced sabermetric stuff that most of us have from our backgrounds at BP or Fangraphs in Matt Corey's case, as well as the fan side of things. And what we try and do at the Red Seat is provide a really balanced view of both the fan side and the sabermetric side, as well as pulling in a lot of media guests from the area. I mean, this year we've had Jen McCaffrey of Mass Live. We had Chris Hatfield of Sox Prospects, Evan Drellick of CSN, Brian McPherson of the Providence Journal. So we try and pull in a lot of the other guys too and get their opinions and just get it from as many sources as we can, because baseball is a tough game to figure out. And, you know, if it's just me talking to the same guy about the same team, I think our views would get stale. So we try and vary things up a little bit more there, and hopefully it works.
Yeah, I think it definitely does. And it's nice because I think, as we spoke before, you can go from the two extremes, can't you? You can have the sort of the real reasoned and thought out view that you guys bring to the game. And then if you want a bit of fun and silliness, you pop on Section 10 and just listen to them shouting at each other, which has its great moments as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And there's not too many Sox podcasts out there. That was another reason why we decided to get into it, was because we saw a gap there where, you know, there was the Providence Journal podcast and there was Section 10, and then there wasn't a whole lot else. So we thought, hey, we could do this and we could fill a need.
Yeah, it's great. It surprised me that there isn't that many team podcasts out there at all. I know there's plenty of generic baseball ones, but I'm really surprised there's not that many team ones going.
Yeah, apparently there was one called The Lone Red Seat a while ago, and that kept popping up for a while when we were just getting started. And I would get annoyed because I'd try to find our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or whatever. And because that one had been around for a while, it was continuously popping up. But I'm here to report that we have surpassed The Lone Red Seat, and we are now the reddest seat in town.
So you are the lone red seat.
We are the lone red seat. That's right.
Just quickly mentioning Section 10, we chatted to it about Jared. Do you think you guys encounter any problems with not being in the clubhouse and having an opinion? Have you had any feedback from players at all?
We really don't. At BP, we operate kind of completely out of that sphere. I think that we interact with the writers more, and I think the writers are starting to accept us because a lot of media members are former BP guys, and a lot of team officials are former BP guys. So the intellectual side of what we do is getting more accepted in baseball, but I think that most players still view a lot of the things that we do at BP as things that they don't really want to pay attention to. You know, baseball is a tough game, man. And, you know, I've got a couple brothers who play it, and I have a friend who pitches for the Twins. And there are enough distractions, I think, that they just really don't have time to dial into the numbers and stuff like that as much as you'd think that they might. To that end, we really don't have a whole lot of interaction. We don't really go in the clubhouse all that much. It's something that we might do in the future. I think we'd be welcome if we did. But all of us kind of like taking the view from 40,000 feet and kind of sussing things out numerically rather than than doing that clubhouse side of things, because in the Boston media, there's really no lack of coverage, right? You can, if you want to know what's happening in the clubhouse, you can get it from about 10 or 12 fantastic sources. So is there really anything that we can gain from going in ourselves? Maybe. But I think what we do well is we take what those guys do on the ground in the clubhouse, and then we take the numbers and we kind of distill it down and give you that analysis through our own lens.
Yeah, I get that point. Yeah, and Jared was kind of the same, the fact that he could just say what he wanted, really. I know it's not really the 40,000 feet thing, but he kind of said he didn't really need that connection. And I think with modern day, apart from the sort of to's and fro's between players and maybe crosswords and things like that, you don't really need it because everything's televised, everything's, you know, available to you. You don't need to worry about that.
Right.
So let's go on to our Red Sox then and talk about how it's been. So what was your expectations preseason before we went into this year?
Well, preseason, I thought the team would be quite good. I have our preseason predictions up in front of us right now. Every single member of the BP Boston staff, including myself, predicted a Red Sox AL East championship. I think that the feeling was going into the season that, yeah, the team's flawed, but every team in this division is pretty flawed. And I think that the Red Sox were certainly the best of them. Had a group of young players that are all on the up and up. And it really did feel like it was their division to lose. That being said, there was only one person, Joyner, who picked the Red Sox to win the AL pennant and the World Series. So most of us thought that the Cleveland Indians were going to be the class of the American League. And I think watching their postseason performance last year, it's not a shock to think that. But, you know, now reassessing things a little bit, with the pitching staff that the Red Sox have, it looks like they could do some damage in the playoffs. So if we were to re-poll this right now, I think that people would be feeling a little bit different about it. And I think that I'm starting to feel a little bit different about it. And a lot of what's going on with the team right now is going to depend on what they do at the trade deadline, right? If they're able to get another bat, if they're able to secure another back of the bullpen arm, I think I'm going to feel significantly different about this team, because then all of a sudden you have a team that can go into a playoff series with Chris Sale, who's going to pitch a couple times, David Price, who's got an ERA under 2 over his last 5 starts, Drew Pomerantz, who's been unbelievable his last 10 or 12 starts, and then conceivably a couple or more back of the bullpen guys, Craig Kimbrell, you know, maybe a David Robertson if they're able to make that happen. And all of a sudden it looks like a team that could be incredibly dangerous in a short series.
I had I said that the Red Sox would go to the World Series and lose to the Dodgers. If I had to play a mulligan, I'd probably say maybe an LDS. ALDS.
ALDS, yeah.
I think my big concerns were the rotation after the big three to begin with. But also the big three I wasn't worried about. So obviously Sale, Porcello and Price, I was not worried about those three. After that, I was a little bit sketchy. If Stephen Wright could do something and maybe keep it going through the year, that'd be great. The bullpen, I had zero worries about, because at the time we had Carson Smith coming back. We had Tyler Thornburg coming off his season he'd had with the Brewers. I thought this won't be a problem at all. And then when it came to the offense, I was very much in the camp of give Sandoval a chance. Let's see what happens. And I thought, yeah, we're going to lose Big Poppy. But we still had the most runs last season in the AL, didn't we? Maybe even in MLB. So I thought, well, even with Poppy taken out of that, that keeps us still top 10. So it's not going to be a problem. The actual experience has been completely different. So talking about going as planned, what are we, 52-41? We're three games ahead of those sneaky Rays at the moment. But is it going as planned? I kind of like the 6-10 feeling of, meh.
Yeah, I don't feel like it has gone to plan. I think especially if you look around the diamond, things aren't going particularly as planned. Mitch Moreland has given the team probably more than they expected, but he has been really in a little bit of a slump lately, kind of evening things out. Pedroia, I think we all expected to have a little bit more power than he's shown this year. While he's been good defensively, and you know, you can't complain about a guy with a 380 something on base percentage, he hasn't really slugged at all this year. So that's been a part of the offense that's been lacking. Xander Bogaerts dealt with that early season injury to his wrist, and his power has not been what it was last year. So that's been a tick down in the offense. I don't even want to talk about the black hole that is third base right now. Moving to the outfield, Benintendi's performed awesome, kind of just as everybody expected. That was another unanimous pick by the BP Boston staff for the AL Rookie of the Year. Unfortunately, Aaron Judge, so that's not going to happen. But even I think if you look at Mookie Betts, he is underperformed to kind of what we saw from him in the second half last year. And I don't think it's fair to look at what he's done so far and say that he underperformed, because you're talking about the All-Star Game starter in center field and one of the best players in all of baseball. But the feeling is that the Red Sox still have a lot of room to grow. I mean, there's a lot of guys who could get better on this club. And I think that we will see a bunch of those guys get better. And if they can plug that hole up at third base for the Todd Frazier, all of a sudden I think you're looking at a unit that is a lot more dangerous than the current version that sits last in the American League in home runs. But I was with you. I thought that the bullpen really wouldn't be too much of a worry. And through the season so far, I mean, the bullpen, by the metrics, has been pretty good. Our relief pitchers are third in ERA, third in WHIP in the entire league. In all of baseball, I should say. But it sure doesn't feel that way, right? It feels like Craig Kimbrell can still be an adventure every once in a while, and I'm not going to complain about him because he's amazing. But then you have Matt Barnes and Heath Hembree, who are kind of who they are. Joe Kelly, who has way overperformed what his underlying numbers say he should be capable of this season, and no Carson Smith and no Tyler Thornburg to be able to rely on. So, it does feel like that unit is lacking. The starting pitching is certainly better than I expected, and the offense is far worse than I expected. So if they don't go out and get a bat, I think there is pretty legitimate reason to be concerned that this lineup could be shut out pretty easily in the playoffs, because right now as it stands, they're already tied for the league lead with 8 shutouts, which, you know, certainly not something you expect from the Red Sox. This is a historically good offensive team. Typically, the Red Sox are always in the top third of the league in runs scored. So this is bizarre territory.
So hopefully there's going to be change. Like you say, maybe the third base hole can solve that. I mean, are we going to see a serious amount of production from the rest of the team if they just plug that one hole?
You know, I think it will help, because what it will do is it'll elongate the lineup and give another dangerous bat down in the sixth or seventh spot with, you know, let's just call the plug Todd Frazier. The Red Sox are pretty adept, fifth in the league in on-base percentage, so they certainly get on base enough. And having another dangerous home run guy down there, I think is going to be huge to get this offense going. And if you can do that, couple that with a little bit of positive regression from Pedroia, Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, I think that you could see this offense really take off. So I think sometimes it can be something as small as one other bat. You know, maybe it doesn't fix all the issues that the team has, but it certainly will be a step in the right direction. That's for sure.
Yeah, I can't argue with that at all. The I think the thing last year, I seem to remember tweeting out quite a few times when the Red Sox were down quite late, was just saying, do not discount this team. This team will come back. It will fight. I just don't get that feeling this year. It just the fight and the drive doesn't seem to be there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sometimes you'll see, you know, one pitch at bats from guys, and they don't battle the same way that past teams have. And I think that part of that is just finding an identity, an offensive identity without Ortiz, because we're talking about, you know, one of the top five most dangerous hitters in baseball over the last 10 plus years being taken out of that lineup. And all of a sudden everybody's getting pitched a little bit differently. So I don't know how to quantify taking someone out of the lineup like that. And I think that it's just so much more than what the raw numbers show. You know, you can take his counting stats out of the lineup and point to, hey, this team should still be top five in the league in terms of runs scored. And I think, you know, when we had Evan Drellick on our podcast early in the season, we kind of talked about that. And we were like, hey, where do you see this unit ending up in terms of runs scored by the end of the year? And he was like, yeah, I think it would be top five. And that was consensus. You know, we kind of all thought numerically. And I think that taking a guy like Ortiz out of the heart of the lineup and taking him out of the clubhouse, and in addition to that, that's stuff that's tough to quantify. I think there's a trickle-down effect that we don't quite understand that makes it more difficult to fill that void.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Talking about filling voids then, so Pablo finally has been DFA'd. I know you mentioned it on the red seat, the most recent red seat, where you said it should be happening anytime soon. So he's been DFA'd. I mean, he could still technically be sent to the minors, but let's say he's going to reject that assignment, surely.
Yep. Yeah, he will reject that, and he will be outright released, which means he'll be able to sign with another team. But I cannot see another team having all that much interest in him. I mean, it's possible he ends up with, like, the Oakland A's and all of a sudden fixes everything and comes back a productive player. But bottom line is the team just paid him almost $50 million to leave so they could free up a roster spot, which is just you know, it's mind-blowing. I didn't like the signing initially when it happened, but I didn't hate the signing either. You know, I justified it by looking at his defensive metrics and being like, all right, you know, he's a bigger guy, but he's actually passable defensively and his bat's okay and all that stuff. And man, I don't think we all could have been more wrong about this guy. It's I wasn't expecting much this year. I was hopeful, but I was not expecting offense. You know, I wasn't factoring that into the equation when I was thinking about the Sox offense too much. And there just wasn't anything left in the tank. So I think it's ultimately really good for the team, and it's a good sign that the Red Sox are willing to walk away from guys like that. You know, some teams might be a little bit more stubborn and continue to trot that guy out there because he's eating payroll. And the good thing about, you know, being a fan of a wealthy team like the Red Sox is that, you know, they're able to admit their mistakes and move on from them. But for sure, he's probably the biggest reason, no pun intended, why Charrington's no longer with the club.
It was, I think I was sort of on the crest of his postseason type wave and thinking he was going to bring something special to the team. But I think, like you, it's more the defensive side. I was hoping for, you know, 260 average and maybe 10 home runs a year. I'd be quite happy with that. Just getting plugging along, as long as he could fill the defensive gap, that was fine. I mean, this was sort of Will Middlebrook's time, wasn't it? So we'd seen that project fail completely. So I'm kind of glad it's done and they're going to get rid of him, but I'm still kind of surprised they've just eaten that money. I thought they would have tried to get somebody to take that and maybe give it to the Phillies or something, but those calls must have been made and the phones must have been put down pretty much straight away.
Yeah, I think that what you would have to do to get another team to take that on is to give some sort of prospect capital back. And I think that the amount of prospect capital that you would have to accompany with a guy like Pablo Sandoval to get somebody to take that money was ultimately not worth it to the team. That would be my guess as to why that didn't occur, because I'm sure that there is a point where a team would take that on for a nice package of young players. But with the Red Sox in sort of a unique position where they had a top five farm system in baseball and now find themselves with a bottom third farm system in baseball, all those guys were really valuable. And I think we saw that this year as the Red Sox were extremely aggressive in both the draft and in the July 2 international signings. They signed a ton of guys in both areas, more than is typical for those signing periods, to kind of revamp that farm system. So, and some of that has to do with the fact that they've had the international sanctions on them for the last couple of years and weren't able to sign people, and now they are clear to do that. So, I think they're hugging prospects tighter than they have in a number of years right now.
Yeah, I think they've got to hold on now. And we spoke briefly before, but this is it's 3 years or bust. We've got this 3 year window and we've got to go for it. And I think, well, Dave Dombrowski is very much proven to just throw prospects at the problem and try and solve it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Dave Dombrowski has proven to be right more often than not. And the criticism with Dave Dombrowski's deals is not that he didn't end up with the best player in the deal in most occasions. I think the only one where you can kind of say that maybe he didn't is the Travis Shaw one, because that hasn't worked out quite how anybody anticipated. But, you know, by and large, Dave Dombrowski has done a really good job of getting the team players that can impact the team right now. And sacrificing the future a little bit to do that. But the bottom line is that you've got a window right now where Bogarts, Betts, Bradley, that young core is locked up. And really the next 3-4 years are where you need to make the most of that. So it's understandable what he's done. And the farm system is there to make the big club better. So it's hard to argue with the results. And I think that that's what people were craving after Charrington too. There were often times where I think consensus amongst Red Sox fans was that the team needs something and that Charrington was reluctant to go out and get it. Because maybe where Dave Dombrowski is more willing to shop for the fair deal and provide fair value for people, Charrington was more likely to get that extra guy and win the trade in a way that Dave Dombrowski is content not to do. You know, Dave will give you what it takes to get those guys. And Charrington is going to be his deal, his way, or it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And I think you said it best on the Red Seat podcast, the fact that you would not turn that sale deal around by any chance right now. You're quite happy to just give them what they want because Sale has just been incredible. But my question to you is, why do our hitters hate Chris Sale?
I don't know, man. I was there on Saturday and I sat through that whatever that thing was, 16 inning game. I think I left in the 13th inning to go get a meat pie somewhere because I was starving. But man, I don't know. It's tough. It's something like they've lost like 6 of his starts where he struck out like 10 guys or more.
It's incredible. How did this even happen? He thought he was leaving Chicago and coming to, you know, as we said earlier, first, second, third place run scoring team. And
right.
What are we doing? We're utter shit behind him.
Yeah. I mean, it's, he's got to be surprised as we are by all this. It's tough because like on that day you go and you're watching a pitcher's duel and I'm a pitching nerd, so, you know, I love pitcher's duels. And I was just happy as a clam watching that whole thing happen. Severino was pitching really well, and I think Sale ended the day with 12 strikeouts, 2 or 3 hits, maybe 1 walk, no earned runs. And then Kimbrel gives up the run to Holiday, and I'm just like, ah, oh, come on. Like, this was going to be a nice, tidy, like, 2.5-hour game, and then – and then that happened. So it is really frustrating. I've seen 2 of his starts this year where similar things have happened. But, yeah, you know, hopefully things will turn. If we can get this offense clicking a little bit more, I can see no weapon in the playoffs being more valuable than Chris Sale. And sometimes we forget, too, this is a guy that's never pitched in the postseason. So it's going to be a completely unique experience for him as well. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I mean, there's no better weapon than a true ace in the playoffs. And I think maybe you could argue that an Andrew Miller type swing guy is that same type of weapon. But history has proven that a true ace in the playoffs is one of the most devastating things you can have. And, you know, he's in that argument with Scherzer and Kershaw for the best pitcher in all of baseball. So really no one else I'd rather have out there in the playoff game.
It'd just be incredible, wouldn't it, if he's going out there for Game 1, potentially 4, maybe even Game 7.
Oh, yeah.
Each series. If we can just take it the distance, you can see Chris Sale 2, definitely 2, maybe 3 times in a series. Would just be brilliant.
Yeah, and, you know, from his personality, too, you could certainly see a guy like Chris Sale after his 2 starts, maybe if he doesn't get the nod for Game 7, certainly coming out in relief and giving you a couple good innings, too. He's just... He's got a fire to him that reminds me of vintage Pedro Martinez. And it's something that you don't see in every pitcher. And, you know, getting to watch him on a regular basis is a treat. And it makes this season fun despite the frustrating offense.
Yeah, I think Zane frustrations, and then other people listening to this who are fans of other teams might be just thinking, what are these two on about? You've got Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrell finishing games for you.
Yeah, well, I think Brian Joyner, and I urge you all to go read his stuff too if you haven't, but he had a great article for Over the Monster recently where he kind of spelled out the odd feeling that most Red Sox fans have that something is wrong with this team, even though we do sit in first place right now. And it really is a funny thing that not only has he touched on, but a few other members of the Boston media have touched on that, like, if the Bruins or the Celtics or the Patriots were in first place, like, everybody would just be so happy. But Red Sox fans have just this natural, innate, God-given pessimism, you know, that just in my personal experience, it comes from, you know, Aaron Boone and all sorts of terrible things that I've seen happen in this club. So we just expect the worst, and we'll not be content. And, you know, you'll hear some of that. You'll get my pessimistic Boston takes on the red seat. And I am not above it. I have not grown out of it. It is who I am. And I will continue to spout piss and vinegar about this team from time to time, even when things are going well. But it's what makes me a Bostonian, right? It's part of me.
I think that's pretty much every sports fan as well, though, because I've been sat on the sofa. My wife and I, we never watch the same program on the evening because it's usually baseball on. Starts around 6 p.m. in the UK. The second set of games are on about 9 p.m. in the UK. So you can just get home from work. You can have your dinner. Children go to bed. And then it's baseball on. And that's all you're going to be watching. And she will see me sitting there, and I'll be shouting at the iPad for something that's happened. Maybe a reliever's coming or something, or why are they intentionally walking this guy? Whatever it may be, and I'll be shouting at, this is it, we're going to lose, it's all over. And all of a sudden we win the game, and I'm dancing around the room. And I think every sports fan goes through it, where you sit there and think, oh, no, Kimbrel's going to mess this up, this is it, he's messed this one up completely. And then, all you know, three pitches, strikeout, game over.
Yeah, it is. It's just like that, and I think you're right on the head to mention Kimbrel's name, because I have had that experience now three times in the last week, where I have been watching Kimbrel and I've had to remind myself, Jake, he has a 1.19 ERA and a 0.5 WHIP, and you're sitting here freaking out about this situation, and it'll just never change. I think, you know, his debut with the Red Sox maybe has colored that in a certain way for me, but I mean, the guy's as good as it gets right now, and I still think that it's like Joe Kelly out there every time he's pitching. So it's it can be a funny experience being a fan. You know, your brain always tells you something that's not true.
Yeah. So do you think if we were going into the playoffs with Kershaw, Scherzer, and Sale as our starters, you'd be more comfortable? Would you still be going, no, not happy, still not happy about this?
Kershaw, Scherzer, and Sale, I'd be worried about Kershaw's postseason experience. I'd be worried about Scherzer's health because he's getting older, and I would worry about Sale's lack of experience. So there you go. I'm never happy.
Even with the three best in the game. Nope, not happy.
Yep.
I want more.
Yep. Give me something better.
It's strange, isn't it? So with that in mind then, so what's your predictions for the rest of the way? You said you had them – taking the AL East, and then I can't remember if you said, are they going to go on to the pennant, you thought, or?
Preseason, I thought they wouldn't. Now I'm kind of thinking that they might. So first, I think that they're going to make a move at the deadline for Frazier. I think they will pick up a reliever as well, and I don't think it's going to cost the team their top two prospects to do so. If it does cost Jason Grom, fine. I can live with that. As long as Devers is still on this team by the end of that, that's fine. But I do think that with the favorable second half schedule that they have with so many games at home, I think that they are going to start to pull away from the rest of the division. In the Yankees, I mean, they came in here and they played a tough series against Boston, no doubt. They still look like a dangerous team, but I think that they just don't have the pitching. And more importantly, the Yankees are in a stage right now where I think Cashman is going to be very hesitant to add any more to this team because their vision is for 2 to 3 years from now, well, really 2 years from now, when that big free agent class comes up. So I don't think there'll be buyers. And with Quintana being taken out of the American League and sent over to the National League, I think that's a big weapon that Houston could have acquired. And when you're looking at the way that the Red Sox pitching stacks up against a team like Houston, Houston's got a couple good pitchers at the top. They've got Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers, but those guys are frequently on the disabled list recently. So I think the pitching certainly favors the Red Sox. And the hitting sure doesn't, but I just feel like in a short series that pitching is going to be the most important factor. And I think that the Red Sox have that in spades. So I see them winning the division fairly easily. I wouldn't be shocked if it ends up being a double-digit game lead by the end of the year for the division. And I mean, I wouldn't feel great about playing the Astros. I don't feel great about anything in regards to the Red Sox, but I would feel pretty good about the Red Sox chances versus Houston or even the Cleveland Indians in a series.
Yeah, I think Houston, I'd go with that. As I said, preseason, I had them going all the way to the World Series, which I think maybe, as we said, ALDS maybe this time, but you might have just convinced me that it might go a little bit further. I think the Astros and their strikeout rate with people like Chris Sale and Pomerantz throwing the way they are at the moment, I think they'll just destroy them and they won't stand much of a chance. And I think in the most recent series, we beat them in that. So it wasn't a case of them just exploding and going for it.
Right. And that was in Houston too.
Yeah. So, and as we just said then, if we've got Sale 1-4 and maybe game 7, I don't think teams are going to stand much of a chance. But I think it's the NL's year this year. They are just looking so strong across the board. It's been incredible watching those guys.
Yeah, the NL is dangerous. You know, not only is it the Dodgers who are looking like they're gonna win a stupid amount of games this year, like 110 plus. But I mean, the Nationals just adding to their bullpen, and it seems like they're trying to add another guy and possibly Justin Wilson. If they can shore up that back end, I mean, they've got as dangerous a rotation as anybody. And the offense there is fantastic as well. So, you know, I could see a Nationals or a Dodgers, and if the Cubs get hot, they're somebody you can't mess with. Even the wild card teams out in the National League are really good. So, it's going to be a heck of an exciting year to be a baseball fan. And, you know, maybe the both of us as fans of the Sox can tune into some of those National Leagues and enjoy them stress-free.
Yeah, that's going to be the great thing, watching, like you say, the Nationals going up against the Dodgers and getting destroyed. I think the Nationals are probably a little bit higher than they should be, purely because the NLE's been disgustingly bad this year.
Oh, it's awful.
It's terrible to watch, isn't it? I really thought the Mets would be up there, and what an absolute dumpster fire that place is.
Yeah, it's crazy. You gotta question what the Mets have been doing with their medicals. It seems like they need to revamp their whole thinking. Too many guys get injured for that team. So, yeah, I had them as a playoff team this year, and I think many people did. So, yeah, I think preseason I had the Giants and the Mets as my playoff teams, and both those guys are, 30 games out or something like that now? It's crazy.
That's exactly what I have. I'm just going to load up mine now. So, yeah, I had Giants and Mets as my wildcard teams.
Yep.
And it was Nationals, Cubs, and Dodgers for the division winners.
Yeah, I was the same with you. So, in the American League, I had the Astros and the Mariners as my wildcard teams, with the Rangers, Indians, and Red Sox winning those divisions. But, yeah, I think I'm a little surprised, too, by some of the underperformance in the American League West, too. I'm surprised the Astros run away with that to the degree they have.
I thought the Mariners would be a lot better. I went for the usual optimist pick of the Mariners taking the division, but that's clearly not going to happen now. But I really thought the Mariners were better. I really thought the Blue Jays would be better.
Yeah,
especially their rotation.
Yeah, the rotation's been rough. You know, J.A. Happ's been okay, and Stroman's been really good this year. But, man, Aaron Sanchez has given that team practically nothing.
Yeah, it's been a mess, which obviously is great news for us. We don't mind at all. Goodbye, Blue Jays. Goodbye, Orioles. Goodbye, Yankees. We'll drag the Rays with us. I don't mind the Rays coming through, to be honest.
You don't? How come?
I don't know. I don't know if it's because we've discussed this before. I don't know if it's because I don't live out there and I don't really have that interaction with Rays fans. But I think out of the other four in that division, the Rays fans are probably the quietest in my experience. And also, they don't really have a lot going for them. So if they win, I just think, oh, that's quite nice. Yeah, you come into a wild card spot, but you're not getting anywhere.
I'm not even sure there are Rays fans. I got to be honest. I think that it's just a rotating bus of retirees in Florida that they just drive to those games. I don't think that there are any real fans who grow up as Rays fans. They all just pass away after about 10 years of taking the retirement home buses there.
Do you think the Marlins fans, when the Marlins aren't at home, just go up to Tampa and then just go and sit in the games there and vice versa?
Could be. You know, they just they go for the cheap beer.
Is it cheap down there? I imagine that all baseball games are stupidly expensive.
Well, you know, Florida is cheaper in general, so I just assume. I haven't been down to the Trop, thank God. It's supposed to be one of the worst parks in all of baseball. Yeah, I can't say, but I assume that they have to run all manner of little specials to get people to attend those games. It's funny. I mean, even when the Rays were close to the top of the division or winning divisions, they were not selling that place out. So it's pretty funny. I wonder often why they have a baseball team in St. Petersburg, because they're not actually in Tampa Bay. They're in St. Pete, which is not exactly a place you'd think that would be able to support a major league team, and they don't do it very effectively.
What sort of drive is that then? Is it quite a long drive? Or
I think it's about an hour, if memory serves me right. So here we have Montreal doesn't have a team, but the St. Petersburg Tampa Bay Rays have a team, which precisely zero people follow. So I'm going to take the other side. I think for a lot of Red Sox fans, especially what was it, 2010, 2011, losing that division race to Tampa Bay. I think it was also 2009 they may have lost the division race towards the end of the year to Tampa Bay. But there are some years when I've really hated the Rays, like a tremendous amount of hate towards the Rays. In some ways, I feel like the rivalry between the Red Sox and Rays has been more intense than it's been between the Yankees since about 2008, maybe. You'll definitely get some hate from me for the Rays.
That's fair enough. And this may sound strange coming from an ex-colonial giant and you being a colonial historian. But maybe it's just that we Brits like a plucky underdog, someone who's got all the odds stacked against them and wants to fight back. And the Rays have that. They've got nothing going for them. As you've already said, they don't sell out. They don't have the payroll. They draft sort of mid-range because they very rarely finish rock bottom of the AL. Mm-hmm. So maybe I just think, oh, come on, let them have a few wins.
Yeah, I see that. You know, if I wasn't a Sox fan, I could certainly see respecting the way that they go about the process, because you're absolutely right. And especially when Andrew Friedman was there as the general manager, they made do with a whole lot less than a lot of other clubs. So yeah, you got to respect the way that they've been able to run that operation with precisely five old women and two children who are visiting Disney World as fans.
I'm going to have to obviously go towards your experience and your knowledge, because you're there, you're living it, you're in Massachusetts, so you're feeling the heat from Rays fans and all the crap you must get on Twitter from Rays fans. So I've got to obviously bow to your experience. We get nothing in the UK. I think there's probably two Rays fans in the UK. One of them's a policeman and the other one is just a really, really nice guy who comes on our podcast every now and then. So I don't really have any hatred towards them whatsoever. I would say they are probably rock bottom of the hatred list for me.
All right. Well, you know, it's all about who you know. So I know some really nice Yankees fans too. Well, I guess that doesn't affect my hatred for them. So I've got to be more like you. I got to let bygones be bygones with my teams and people. Got to separate them better.
But hold on. So when I used to really enjoy football and for you soccer, back in the sort of 90s and early 2000s, I used to live in a small place outside Birmingham called Tamworth, and It was filled with Aston Villa fans. And I absolutely hated Aston Villa with a passion, because the fans would always talk about their two European Cups that they've done, blah, 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 blah. We're a big team. We're one of the big. We're up there with Man U. We're up there with Arsenal. And they weren't at all. But their fans just kept going on about how they're a big team. And they'd always finish sort of mid-table, 15th, 10th, 20th. And you just think, go away. Why are you talking like this? You're just horrible to listen to. Your team is shit and you just won't admit it. And I think maybe I need that interaction and being surrounded by Rays fans to really get that.
Well, you know, they only come out during playoff time. You really will never see a Rays fan in, like, you know, you're in line for a coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. You're not going to run into a Rays fan. They just don't exist. So I think what makes it even more frustrating is that, like, you'll get attacked by a Rays fan in, like, game three of a playoff series. And you'll be like, hey, man, where the hell have you been? You know, like, where did you come from? Because you weren't there the rest of the year. And it's like probably the guy's fifth game that he's even seen this year. So it's funny when these teams that don't have any fan base to speak of come out of nowhere and want to badger Red Sox fans. So, but we welcome it. We welcome all comers.
Yeah, exactly. Was it the 2015 Blue Jays that started off with empty stadiums and then it was filled by the end of the season?
That's right. Yep. Beautiful thing.
God bless him. Right, we could chat about this all night, but we really must go. We're always meant to try and keep these like 30 minutes to 40 minutes, but I think we're rolling on for an hour now. Jake, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been really, really interesting and really good to chat to you. Where can people find you on Twitter or BP?
Yeah, you can find my my Twitter at @devjake. You can find me on BP Boston. We release the Red Seat there every single week. You can go on Twitter. On iTunes or Stitcher and download our podcast there. Subscribe to us, rate and review us. If you like this Red Sox podcast, you probably like our Red Sox podcast as well. And then all of us, all the guys that I mentioned, Chris Teeter, Cam Ellis, Brett Cowett, Matt Corey, Brian Joyner, myself, Ben Carsley, we all write on the site BP Boston as well. So you can find all of our writings there.
Yeah, the writing's fantastic. The podcast is really good. As Jake said, it comes out every week. It's usually about 40 minutes to an hour. I think the Chris Hatfield one was the longest one you've done, but that was brilliant. Just listening to all the different prospects he was talking about and going really deep in the system. So if guys want to check that out, it's well worth listening to. It's not too dated now because we haven't given anything up since that podcast.
Yep, we've still got all the assets.
It's still there. And I did just notice that the starting lineup's just been released. And a guy we haven't talked about, who my hero is Brock Holt, is back in the lineup at third base, which is great to see.
Yeah, it's awesome. He's been dealing with some pretty serious concussion issues. So for him to shake those issues and get back on the field is huge, not only for the team, you know, offensively and everything, but just because he's an awesome guy to be out there. So it's great to see him back.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a bit like when Brian Johnson, when he was suffering his anxiety last year, just to see him come back this year and get the complete game as well, the first one of the season, was just brilliant. So again, the plucky underdog, the adversity, that's what we like to see.
Absolutely.
Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter at @batflips_nerds. You can find us on our website, batflipsandnerds.com. Please do rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, etc. It really does help us. We're going to start stealing some ideas from Section 10 and maybe do some sort of review of the week. And if you guys can start reviewing us, start putting your reviews up there and then post screenshots of it, we'll start thinking about doing some giveaways and giving you some good clobber, all from MLB UK. So once again, thanks very much, Jake, for joining us, and we'll see you all next time. Goodbye.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Hello, it's Monday, the 17th of July, and it's time for Brit Sox and Nerds. We are sticking with that name. The Red Sox pin-off pod... I'll start that again.